Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us for some Red Eyes Radio. It's always an honor that you want to spend some of your time with us, and it's great to have you here to be part of what we are doing. We do investigations into many of the important questions and enter into the forbidden zones of, you know, all the things we're not supposed to talk about, much less do research about. We are speaking with Olle Damegård again today, who joins us for a discussion on the recent events in both Paris and Copenhagen. We are going to discuss in some detail the patterns that follows these kinds of events, how they tie together, and why it's so important to analyze them in greater detail. I think you know Olle by now if you're a regular listener, but if you are new, let me just tell you a little bit about him. He is a prize-winning author, investigator, and former journalist for more than 30 years. He's worked hard on solving the mystery behind the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, a subject we've covered here on Red Eyes in great detail. We have a lot in the archives for you about that. He's also looked closely at many of the century's biggest murder mysteries, like JFK, John Lennon, Robert Kennedy, Salvador Allende, and including the cold-blooded sinking of MS Estonia, taking almost 1,000 innocent lives. This was actually one of the biggest maritime disasters in the Baltic Ocean after the Wilhelm Gustloff that the Allied sunk with thousands of innocent German civilians after World War II. Our guest is dedicated to solving the pattern of false flag operations so that this can be used as a tool to recognize them as a kind of an early warning system in an effort to try to prevent them from happening. We'll have some photos and videos embedded on the program page. I know that some of you listen via Stitcher, the RSS feed, YouTube, and there's a number of other ways you can get our show as well. But if you want to access some of the reference material, please go to our website, redicecreations.com, redicesradio.net, or redicemembers.com, our members' website, and click into this program page. And you'll have some of the things right there that Olle will be mentioning and will be discussing. So don't forget to go to the website as well. But that's enough of that. We need to get this show on the road. So stay with us, folks. We'll get going. Hey, Olle, welcome back. Thank you so much for being here. It's great to have you again. Hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing absolutely great. Thank you, Henrik. It's great to be back.
Now, I'm interested in hearing more about your view on the Copenhagen attack. This is the most recent one and how this, of course, went down, considering that you've looked into many previous false flags. We've talked about this on the previous shows, of course, and we'll get to this a little bit later. But you were on the story in January already, about a month before it unfolded. But I know you wanted to back up a bit first and go into some of the prior things that we've had, maybe beginning in and Paris. I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about this, Olle. So please give us the details of how you viewed these last couple of events here.
Okay, first I just want to say that I spent some 30 years of my life looking into major assassinations, big conspiracies, and also false flag operations, since false flag operations, in my opinion, is one of the major tools that have been used by the so-called global elite for so many years. I would humbly suggest that more or less all wars in modern time are based on false flag operations. And so many things that we have absolutely no idea are connected, are carried out by the same group and for the same reason. This false flag operation is an old naval term, and it comes from the idea that in the old days, if you want to go in and hit a different nation or a city or something like that, to avoid consequences with your country, your neighboring countries and other, political reasons and so on. What they did was that they took one of their own ships and then got an enemy flag on it. Then they let their own ship attack themselves. And then they would say, oh my God, we've been attacked, we've been attacked. And that would justify for them to hit back, invade, slaughter and plunder and whatever. So these false flags have been extremely efficient when it comes to creating or developing the world into what it is today. And this is also why I think it's extremely important to look what is behind it, who are actually carrying these things out. Because either we're looking upon the enemy being the Muslim terrorists, And in that case, they're totally crazy, trying to blow everything up in the world, killing everything that has to do with the Western world. Or we are looking upon an inside, an enemy within, somebody who's trying to get us to believe that these are the deeds of lone crazy guys or extremists and so on, so that they will freak us out and then we will accept their solution, whatever their solution is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I would strongly suggest that the old Roman template, problem, reaction, solution, is extremely important once again to understand that they, the people in power, secretly create a problem. In these days, it's more or less always a mass shooting, a bomb, a so-called terror act, a awful virus, or a financial disaster, or something like that. They secretly create it to get the reaction from the public, us, and the reaction they always want is that we freak out and just scream, please, please help us. Something needs to be done. We're under attack. And we turn towards the people that we have elected, at least we think so, to take care of these things, and then they will serve us the solution. The solution is always something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Problem, reaction, solution. And every single time, the solution is that we have to give our civil rights, our human rights, have to accept more and more robocops in the streets, martial law, tanks, surveillance, giving up anything, our privacy, all of these things. That is the standard solution to these things.
Now, I don't want to complicate things too much, but would you say that there could be a third variable here too, when you have, well, you kind of explained that already, but a foreign element, a foreign body within one of the nations we're talking about, that performs an attack in order to either you know, legitimize, let's say, you know, joining up with someone, teaming up with someone in a war effort, or potentially in a threatening manner. That's another angle to this I've heard before, as kind of a way of saying behind the scenes to some other political leaders that, like, if you don't, you know, abide by our rules, another one of these attacks will occur on your soil again, kind of thing. It's a blackmail measure. What do you think about that, Ulla?
I think when it comes to operations on this scale, there's always more than one reason. You know, there are multiple reasons why they carry them out, because they're quite complicated to organize and so on. So I would totally agree with you. Blackmailing, forcing, scaring, also from the inside. You know, it's very, very complicated sometimes to find out what is behind it. What I've done over all of these years is that I focus on one area. What I look at is on the street level. What is carrying out there? Who did it? How was it carried out? By whom? And so on. And then I leave the bigger agenda to other researchers, because it's just too big for one single person to cope with.
Yeah, very, very good. So should we, do you want to begin in Paris?
Yeah. When it comes to the latest attacks, I would say that there's a very, like a Jewish theme that have been very clear, almost like a Jews on one side and the Muslims on another side.
That's right.
And that this is the one they're trying to force on us at the moment. And when you look at the time, when these things are carried out, they're very... often on special dates, on special days like Veterans Day or Memorial Day or whatever it is, they want to trick us into believing. They try to get to our subconscious as well. So there would be lots of things involved that will there to persuade us to accept their solution. So there will be subliminal messages. There will, like, the street names can be part of the helping to get us to get more emotional about it, or the site they're attacked, or the names of the victims, or messages on vehicles in nearby that are on photos and so on. So there's a whole big propaganda thing going on in the background, which I think is very important to be aware of. So I'm just going to point out a lot of different things. Not saying that they cannot be coincidences. Of course, some of them could be. I will just show that there is a lot of it that could be very well be done by design. So if we start with the Paris thing, it is 70 years now since the liberation of Auschwitz, and there's all of this thing about the Holocaust, and we mustn't criticize Israel in any way or form because they were the victims and of these awful things and so on. And I would say, if they really happened, yes, in that case, awful, awful. But there's so many things coming forward now about the whole history about the Second World War, the Holocaust, Hitler's war machine, all of these things. There's so much coming forward now that it's showing a very different picture to what we have been taught.
Yeah, I'm very glad you mentioned that, because that's one of these things that has been so controversial for such a long time, of course. But I feel as well that a lot of people they're kind of starting to realize that, wait a minute, World War II is like one of the biggest false flags. Not that it didn't happen, I didn't mean that in any way, but the way that the conflict was exacerbated and the way that it was utilized by the Allied forces, specifically post-World War II, and how it was used against people. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, Ulla, because I think it's one of those variables that, unfortunately, a lot of people miss it, because it's such a big, horrific event that I think emotionally a lot of people just stay away from it overall, even if it's fantasy, what we've been given, or if it's the real story or not, but people just kind of get overloaded there. So thank you for bringing that up, by the way.
I just want to say, when I come to a crime scene, I try to come with an open mind and just look at the evidence. What happened, who carried it out, who benefited, and why was it done? And when you look at the Second World War, I mean, I've spent thousands of hours looking into a lot of these things, and a lot of them make absolutely no sense whatsoever. So I'm just saying, look at it with an open mind and just see where the truth will lead you. And it's leading down a very strange road if you compare it to the official history books.
That's right. Yeah.
I would also say it's good to be aware of that the history books are written by the victors. The ones that won whatever war is the one that wrote the story.
Yeah.
So this is, if Hitler had won the war, the history books would have looked very, very different.
Yeah, you got that.
And so on.
Yeah.
Because then you would have had the bad guys would have been the Americans, the English, these would have been the terrorists, and the German population would have been the heroes and so on. Now they are the ones who have to carry this guilt of this load of guilt on their shoulders.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, there is an incredible imbalance in what has been portrayed after the Second World War. When you look at it, because there's absolutely no war crimes that has been exposed that I know of, hardly, when it comes to the Allied or the English side or the American side or other.
You've heard about the German prison camps then, how many German soldiers were dead, and the Wilhelm, I forget the last name of the boat that was sunk with several thousand German civilians on it, one of the biggest maritime disasters, even bigger than Titanic.
Yeah, but these things, these things just disappears.
Sure.
And it's things like that makes me go, whoop, let's wait, we back up a little bit, get some distance and an better overview and see what happened. And also with the whole Holocaust, I mean, the numbers and the gas chambers and all of these things, it's a matter of Farmer Brown logic, in my opinion. You have a very, very poisonous gas, then of course you need to make sure that this gas does not leak out. Whatever reason you use this, you have to be very cautious with these things. Then you look at the official story, and there's absolutely no protection from anyone. I mean, if what happened, if we are supposed to believe the official story, they just gassed people and then let the gas out. I mean, they would have been killed, all of them.
Yep,
and also the body, the color of a body that has been killed by these awful gases, or it doesn't match up. The numbers, you can't even get the numbers right. Nowhere near the numbers that we are told have been murdered in these camps and so on. So very confusing, and I think very important to look at these things, because this has been used for such a long time.
Absolutely.
As a propaganda tool,
yeah.
Not to point any accusing fingers.
Yeah.
And for me,
it's guilt, you know.
I'm a journalist. Yeah. But the thing is, you know, like if I go and, for instance, to Germany and I say, listen, I'm doubting the official numbers of the dead people in Auschwitz, I would be put in jail.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm just raising a question, saying, listen, guys, I can't match this up. Could you please help me just figure out this one? If you can prove it for me, I'm happy. You know, okay, fine. It's so much easier than it's the official story. Let's go for it. But when you look at it and it doesn't add up at all, then we're in the areas where I dedicate my life to try and expose the truth. Whatever it will take me, the truth is the truth. And I believe in the power of truth, you know, transparency.
Me too. Yeah.
Let us know what happened. Let us know what happened. That's the only thing I ask.
Well,
you know?
Why is it so difficult to get through to that on people, that it's not about making a moral value judgment upon anything? As you say, it's not about the numbers. It's not about the logic and reality to these people. These are thought crimes, you know, and if you don't believe the narrative that you're given, as you say, then you can end up in behind bars, you know. And I think it's the only historical event that has that particular slant on it too, which is quite incredible, actually.
The way I see it, the real truth fears no investigation.
Yeah.
You know, the fear is clean, pure, and so on. If you have nothing to hide, fine. So why on earth, as soon as somebody even raises a question, they will be hit, knocked over, threatened, thrown to jail, and so on? That, in my books, will say these people, whoever they are trying to hide something. They're trying to
cover up,
and they're very afraid of getting exposed. And that just makes me even more determined to find out what really happened.
Very good. Very
so,
good.
Yeah. No, I'm just, you know, I try to stay totally open for the fact. Let them talk for themselves, and then I'm not here to persuade anyone. I'm here if I can assist with all of these years I put into this, assist with maybe opening up some things that would help ordinary people to understand what's going on. Because I would very much suggest that we have been duped and lied to for a long, long time, and it's high time for us to wake up now.
Very good.
So
yeah.
I think this is a beautiful year to be alive, because I think this is the year a lot is going to happen for the better.
Great. Yeah.
Anyway, so if I can take you to the latest one in Paris. So here we are at a year where Israel has been criticized internationally for being absolutely awful to the Palestinian people. I mean, we're being told that there's an armed conflict between these two areas of the same country. I would say, when you look at it, it's like sending in Mike Tyson into a nursery, and he's like beating up the babies, and you say there's some conflict going on. There's absolutely no balance whatsoever. So I would also say a country that or a population that have been going through all of these awful things, if they have that, the way we've been told, I really think that they should know better than to treat their neighbors like that. They should have learned from these awful atrocities and said, listen, enough of this madness. Let's be friends. Let's join, you know, be great neighbors. Let's build a beautiful future together. But here we see the absolute opposite, that they're totally blowing people to pieces, absolutely innocent people, most of them children, bombing them. I mean, making like massive big ghettos with big walls around them, and then just dropping bombs from the outside. So, well, anyway, so Israel has been criticized a lot. And now when we look into this, I'm not here to point blaming fingers at Jews as a group or something. Absolutely not. For me, it's not a matter of color, religion, whatever. We're talking about criminals on a high level, who are carrying out things like that, but from a hidden point that we are not supposed to see. So I want to expose the people behind that, not a group as a race or population, absolutely not, but the people behind these things. So we have this very historical year, 2015, which is when it was the war ended in the spring of 1945. So it's an anniversary. And this is when all of the emotions about the what happened to the Jews and so on are high. And here we are, like I said, a group or a country that are being criticized, and now suddenly it would be very handy for the people in control of this country to turn it around so that they get this blaming finger out of the way, and suddenly if they can come out as being the victims, it would be a lot easier for them to carry on with their very, very brutal agenda. So we look at Paris. What happened here? I think most people have seen these awful, awful images. Once again, if it really happened, then awful for sure. These images of, especially the ones where there's two terrorists that jumps out of a car, they've shot a police officer in the street, and they run up and fires a headshot to this guy, kills him instantly, and then jumps into the car and takes off. They've been to a newspaper office where there was some a cartoon with against Islam, and they've been very upset because of this, so they've gone on this more or less suicidal raid. They kill a lot of people in the newspaper, and then they go on a killing spree for a few days until they're killed themselves. So, awful, awful if it happened, and no disrespect or anything. I don't want to cause hurt or anything to families of victims and so on. So, but I would very much like, with respect, to approach this from a different angle, just seeing, did it really happen? For a few years after I left Sweden, I was very deeply involved in trying to expose the real truth behind the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme. And it came so far that two of my friends was murdered because we got too close. Very, very tragic. And I felt very threatened. So I decided to leave Sweden, and we came here in the year 2000 to Spain, where I'm living now. And in the beginning, one of the jobs that I could get was as an extra for a film company down on Mallorca. So I spent hundreds of hours sitting, being extremely bored in the background of film sets. So instead of just sitting there and picking my nose, I thought I might as well learn as much as I can. So I was very interested, you know, trying to help the people setting everything up and asking questions all the time, you know, annoying them. How does the light working? Why do you have the microphone there? Why are the cables there? What are these things? What is that? And so on. So I got a very clear view into how films are being made, which I think is fascinating. But it's also come in very, very handy when I look at false flag operations, because we're talking about staged events that are carried out exactly like a film production to pump out through media these awful events to get the reaction from people saying, oh my God, something needs to be done. And then, boom, in comes the agenda, the solution. So, when you do a film shoot in a city, the way it's carried out normally is that it's very important for you that normal people cannot interfere. You can't have a pedestrian walking up and suddenly notice the camera, turn around, look right straight into the camera, and start asking questions. That will just destroy the whole thing. So every time you see a movie or a film production on TV, every single one in the background are extras. Every vehicle is controlled. Everything is controlled because you need all parameters secured. Also, you need continuity of the background, meaning that, for instance, somebody like myself, they would come up and say, okay, listen, this is point A. They will put a cue marker on the street, a white dot like that. This is point A, and we want you to walk over to wherever they wanted me to go. That would be point B. Then when we scream background action, you start walking. Do not look into the camera. Just start walking from point A to point B. And then when we say thank you, you go back to point A. When we do the next take, start walking from point A to point B. The same with everybody in the background. Whatever they were told to do, they should repeat, so that when you do the editing, the background will look the same. So that goes for vehicles as well, you know, because of camera angles, sound, all of these things. Whoever drives needs to know exactly where to stop a vehicle, where to take off. If they do a dramatic crash or something like that, there would be rehearsals before. And many times in action movies and so on, if you see a dramatic thing with a car turning over or something like that, if you look on the street, on the tarred road, you will have skid marks there that goes identical to what actually happens in the film, because they've done rehearsals. So they've done it like four or five times, and then, okay, now we got it, and so on. So if we go to this video, this thing where this police officer is shot, we look at the vehicle, we look at the surroundings. And one of the things is that the producers go to the local authorities and they get the permission to close off the street, because, like I said, they need total control. So very often what is used are like a one-way street, so you can easily turn it off in both ends. And if you want pedestrians and so on, that would be your people. But when it comes to false flags, they try to avoid any background action. So what you're looking at is very often an empty street with parked cars, one vehicle moving. So we look at this thing. It's very dramatic. These guys jumps out of the car. You can see a shaking camera. Oh, my God, it has to be real because the camera is shaking. And then they run out, shoot this police officer back into the car and takes off. You look at what is actually happening, you will see that the vehicle, right under the center of the vehicle, is a black line. That is the type of the marker, cue marker, that would be put on the street saying to the driver, stop here. That would be sideways, and on when it comes to lengthwise, normally you have some kind of a marker as well. In this position, we have the black line exactly under the center of the car, and there's a trainer just outside the door on the passenger side. Now, this trainer, if you look at the two shooters, both of them have shoes on, so it's not that one of them dropped it. And you also see that when the guy on the passenger side runs back and jumps into the car, he picks up the shoe, throws it in there. So it is theirs, and then they take off. You look at the vehicle.
Sorry, Ulla, let me ask you about that, because I've studied the video many times, and I know that one of the videos begins when the shoe, and I'm looking at it right now as we speak. I can add a link to this so people can look at this video when we talk about this here. But one of them begins very abruptly, one of the edits, I should say, of the video, where the shoe is already outside of the car and the door opens up. However, I've seen another video, and I'm going to try to hunt this down because I can't remember exactly now where the source for that was, but that was actually when the shoe was dropped out of the car. And one of the explanations I've gotten for this, and I want to get your take on this, is that they obviously had backup clothing with them. They didn't want to use the, you know, protective whatever kind of, you know, footwear they were using, some kind of protection probably with the, you know, steel-plated or something like that. Who knows, right? That this was a shoe that accidentally was thrown out of the car from the passenger seat, and he actually decided to take it back into the car. Not sure if that's the case, but if I can find that clip again that shows that the shoe was not there by the time the car drove up, because I've seen a video where there's a strange kind of edit where it seems like there's a cut, and all of a sudden the shoe is there, but it wasn't there in the first angle of it. So it is something fishy there, you know.
I would say very much. I don't believe this thing with them having extra clothes and so on. If you go, when they left the car and so on, I mean, it wasn't really like they brought a bag of clothes and a toothbrush and these type of things. At least that is not my interpretation. But what you're talking about, it sounds very much to me like there's two takes, and often they retake these scenes. So possibly I'm pointing this shoe out. I think it's one clue for sure, for something.
Yeah, have you actually looked at what street was this? Because, I mean, reasonably here, there should be, and I'm always very concerned about these things, that there's so little reporting about these things that people in France, in Paris, you know, have to start talking about this, right? Because if it was shot there, then obviously there will be signs of the street being shut down. What were people in the apartment buildings doing there? Have you actually talked with someone, or do you know what street this was happening on, and if there's any witness testimony that have spoken about this in any capacity?
Yeah, it's the street is Richard Léonard Boulevard 62. That is exactly opposite to where it was shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-way street where there's shops on one side and some apartments above them, and then there's a park area on the other side. And this is they often use a park area on the other side. I will tell you that they did exactly the same in Copenhagen, because it's easy to shut off a whole big area if you just close off the park, you know. And this is often done, you know, like, sorry for repairs today, or we're redoing the lawn or something like that, and you just close the gates. So the whole area behind them is empty. Then if you look at the vehicle, as far as I've been able to find out, the vehicle is a Citroën C3 from 2014 with chrome side mirrors. It also got the indicator, the lamps on the front, white indicators on the sides, the side of the front. But the car that is later abandoned by them and is looked over through by the forensic team is a Citroën C3 from 2013 with black side mirrors and no indicators on the front, no white ones. So it's not even the same vehicle, and it's in that vehicle where the so-called evidence is found that turns them in the direction of these so-called terrorist brothers. You will see that there's another thing that keeps repeating, and that is that there are two shooters or two brothers. That is a theme that they keep repeating. And I spoke to, I think it was Kevin Barrett on No Lies Radio, or Truth Jihad Radio, and he said that the twins theme is a sacrificial theme that has been used in everything from Twin Towers to the Lord of the Rings to many of these old stories and so on. I don't know. I'm just pointing it out. They keep having brothers, and also the people that keep getting wounded in these things are police officers. That is repeated. Okay, so we look at where the driver, he jumps out of the car, he runs up on the pavement. Where he runs up on the pavement, you got a white cue marker, at least something that looks very similar to the cue markers that I used to walk from. Then he starts running along the pavement, he passes the police officer, and when he goes down again, he passes another white cue marker. That is exactly where he goes down on the street, and there's a third cue marker in the middle of the street where he turns back towards the vehicle. Exactly the way it would be had it been a film set. Then you have the sound. If you listen, it's very impressive, the noise of the weapons there, AK-47s. But when you listen to the sound image, I've looked in like a sound a special program where you can analyze sound, and it looks to me like this sound has been recorded in a street where there's building on both sides. The echo pattern doesn't really match up with a shot fired where it's open on the other side. Also, when you listen, if you really turn the volume up, you will hear that there are children playing in the background. There are some children laughing and so on. After the shots are fired, the children keeps playing. This is not normal behavior. When somebody fires a shot like that, people freak out. They run away. They start screaming, or at least they stop laughing. So I would very much suggest that this is background sound that has been added afterwards. Then you see, apparently they've shot this police officer because he's down, he's rolling over on the pavement, holding his leg. So apparently he's been shot in his leg. But when the terrorist runs towards him, he puts up his palms like almost like, please don't shoot, please don't shoot. And you will see on his palms, no blood. Then we have the head shot itself, where if you zoom in great detail and go into slow motion, you will see that there's absolutely no recoil from the weapon whatsoever. And we're talking about an AK-47, where it's a very powerful 7.62 or 6.5 millimeter, very powerful weapon. No recoil whatsoever, and absolutely no impact on the head either. And if you've been to a war zone, or you've seen headshots on close up, it's awful. It really, what the damage it does to a head, absolutely horrific. Here, no impact, no blood, no brain, no whatsoever. And you check out, it looks like there's a ricochet coming from the pavement. But if you really zoom in, you will see that the smoke comes from the left hand of the police officer. And there's one frame, if you go very, very slow, you will see in one frame, he's got a small little black smoke canister in his hand. That is where the smoke comes from. And it goes from his palm upwards and to the right. So I would very much suggest no shots were fired. We only hit, the sound effects have been added afterwards, but the smoke canister went off there. Then you have this thing with the blood. When you look later, you have all of these paramedics coming there. They're giving him CPR. I would just say if somebody has been shot in the head, CPR is not the way to go. That can kill him. You know. But they're doing all of these things because it looks good on film. Then they take up the body, and there's no blood on the pavement. And on the stretcher, no blood on the body either. But then later that day, when the BBC is one thing that keeps repeating in these themes as well. The BBC reporter is standing in front of the site saying, oh my God, it's awful, it's awful, it's awful. And here you can see flowers and candles. And here's the blood that has been put on the pavement. His words, the blood that has been put on the pavement. Freudian slip, I would say very much. Then you look at the blood he's talking about, and suddenly we have like 3-4 square meters of blood on the pavement and down on the road, but in the wrong location. Please notice where this police officer is when he's supposed to be shot. There's where you put ads on, one of these ad boards, and it's like the blood is like 1 meter out of the location, is not in the correct location. So we also see that the ones that filmed it, it's said to be a man by the name of his name was Jordi Mir.
That's right. I actually have that here because I wanted to ask you about him a little bit. What you think he regrets that he uploaded the video. That's what he said, right? He said, "Oh my God, I didn't think I uploaded it to Facebook, and I regret that I did it and stuff like that." I say, "Thank you for doing that, so we can actually look at it." But my question there was, so do you think that he was in on it, or was he one of these guys that were actually prone to, someone is bound to show up, and there's so many cameras out there today, let's trust that someone films it. What do you think?
No. Totally in on it. Without the camera in position, there's no point for all the cue markers, for nothing else, you know. Whoever filmed it, if it was him or if he's just somebody who says he did it, absolutely no. And one thing I would like to say also is that it's almost like they've started selling advertisement space on these false flag operations, because they know that millions and millions of people are going to watch it. I'm going to come back to that later. But one of the things that keep repeating when it comes to terror attacks is that they use GoPro cameras, GoPro action cameras. And this guy was using a GoPro action camera. But
we should have been better resolution with those, though, right? I mean, that's one thing that bothers me, because when you did say, looking at this now, when you spoke about the mirrors on the car, that they were black on the one that they caught, and then they were silvery on the car, which we seen the video. I wish, because I'm looking at the vehicle from behind, there's a couple of different shots when the brothers have the car, the initial video. And unfortunately, the quality is so bad that we can't see the license plate. We can't match the license plate from the video that was shot initially to the license plate of the car that is caught later. You know what I mean? So if we could just compare these, it would be great, of course. But unfortunately, the resolution is so bad, which is unfortunate, you know?
It's so unfortunate. And isn't it strange? Like, if you had done that with your mobile camera, you know, or whatever, the quality would have been a lot better. But every single time we see this guy who whoever person is being accused for it, it's the blurry photos. You know, you can hardly see them. They have like a scarf around their face, or they're out of focus, and so on. How come? Very strange. But it's the same every single time. Blurry, blurry. So you cannot get a good high resolution thing and really get into detail.
I'm actually looking at it right now. I'm doing this live here as we speak, so to speak. But I'm looking at it from the behind shot. I mean, again, it doesn't mean that they can't change the plates, of course. But CW518XV, and it looks to be a match on the initial video at least. It looks like an EV at the end, but again, it is kind of poor resolution, but you kind of can make a comparison. But I was just looking for that as a potential key to something, you know?
No, but very possibly they've used a double set of the same,
The vehicle,
license plate.
License plate, yeah.
But the vehicle, the model is not the same year. And also, it seems like they used the one with the chrome side mirrors for the action things, and then for the final thing where you see the forensic team, and that is a different car.
That
one is just...
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the rear view mirrors there right now. Not the rear view mirrors, sorry, it's just the side mirrors, and that's correct.
Can you see?
Yep,
and you see they're black, and there's no reflex, or it's like an extra lamp on the front. There's no white.
Yeah, the shot I'm looking at of the captured car, if we can call it that, the later one, I don't see from that angle. I've been looking at the photos now to try to see if I can get one from a similar angle, which I cannot. I just see one from the side so far on the later car that's caught. But there I can definitely see there's no reflection in the same way in the side mirrors as there is on the initial video footage. Yeah, that's very interesting.
And when you look at the different models, 2013, 2014, you will see the wheels are different, the side mirrors are different, and the indicators are different, mm-hmm. and so on. So you will see not the same car. But the one that they found, you know, we were talking about making selling ad space for these things. The one that is being investigated and checked out and also lifted up on top of a truck, that one is like polished. It looks like it's right out of the showroom. And I'm going to come back to these things where it's almost like they're trying to sell commercial things as well, at the same time make a buck while they do these things as well.
Right.
So when it comes to the film, you know, nowadays, as soon as the camera shake, we think, oh my God, it's an amateur. Oh my God, it's for real. I would say very much put a question mark there as well. Because when you look at how this one is filmed, first it's shaky, shaky. And then, but then as soon as you start moving the camera sideways, it's totally balanced. There's no shaking whatsoever. And then when the terrorists turn around and start running back to the car, You get a part of the rail to the balcony rail above, underneath, and that is exactly if you have a camera on a stand that you can't move forward to get a better view of the one. Here it's exactly the same. Had the camera been on a stand, I would suggest that it is on a stand. They shake it, and then they film the whole thing, and that is also why you get a part of the balcony rail.
Now, was this to be shot on a cell phone, Ulla? Do you know if it was a cell phone, he said?
No, a GoPro camera.
Yeah, no, I know, but the official story, what he said when he shot the film, right, this was supposed to be on his cell phone or something. Isn't that correct?
No, he said it was his GoPro camera.
Oh, he did? Okay,
this is the thing.
Yeah. All right.
This is the thing, because they keep repeating that every time there's a so-called terrorist attack. Either the terrorists are filming it with a GoPro camera, or it's a blah, 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 and they filmed it with a GoPro camera. I'm just pointing these things out when they keep repeating, okay? So that's why I mentioned it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because I saw a zoom, and I wanted to know, because I thought, initially I thought, wait a minute, you can't zoom with a GoPro, but I guess you can, some of the models, the newer ones anyway. But okay, I digress. Go ahead, Ulla.
I don't know. I don't think it was filmed with a GoPro. I think it was they're just getting ads out there, you know, commercial value.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, also if you've been to war zones or when people are shooting and some, there's a great tension in the air, you know, adrenaline, the pulse are pumping and so on. Here, these guys are running around like they were out jogging, very relaxed. He just passes this guy, fires a headshot, doesn't even look at him, doesn't even see if he hit or anything like that. Just up, bum, 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 back into the car, no screaming tires, and just takes off very quietly and relaxed. You know, does not match up either, that one. So
unless, of course, if he is really a trained terrorist professional that was brought in by a team of people, you'd think if that was the case, he would act a little bit more like he was uncertain and not so relaxed like a professional, right? So there are these kind of interesting discrepancies here, inconsistencies.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think it's quite obvious that nothing really happened. If something had happened, had they shot this guy and it had been like trained mercenaries that had carried this out and they actually killed the police officer, then it's a totally different thing. But here, absolutely nothing happened, in my opinion.
All right. And so these are not necessarily trained military professionals. These are actors. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe they are military people. I think many times when you look at like the so-called SWAT teams and the military people, the way they behave is very, very poorly. You know, not mm-hmm. like trained, disciplined warriors. Absolutely not. So there's another sequence where you see the car coming on a one-way street. We're back to that. There's absolutely no pedestrians. There are absolutely no other vehicles. And they come front to front with a police car. The two terrorists, one of them hanging out of the side window, starts firing at the police car. The driver jumps out, starts firing as well. And the police car starts reversing in high speed, trying to avoid getting hit. Very dramatic. Okay, we look at that. The rear mirror on this car is crushed. For some reason, it's crushed. Okay. So the official story says that the police car, when trying to escape, he crosses another street and goes straight across and hammers right into the side of a parked car. So you look at the photos of the parked car and the damages, and the damages to the police car, I would say the dents are too high compared to where it should have hit the car that was parked. And also the damage to the silvery-colored parked car, very strange. There's no dent, but the wheel has been sort of knocked off. It, I would say, doesn't make sense again. I would very much suggest that just like in the Woolwich beheading and so on, where they just came there and took a car from the scrapyard and dumped it right on the pavement. You know, I think there's something similar here. Anyway, so we continue. It just goes on and on. You have this footage where there's some people who they're up on a rooftop and they're saying, oh my God, somebody's shooting down on the street. We need to hide. They're hiding behind a wall like 10, 15 meters up in the air on a roof up there. And you start seeing these, and of course it's filmed with a mobile camera, shaky like this. Then if you slow it down and you really check out, you will notice that two of these people have bulletproof vests on. I mean, how on earth these are so-called people that were just, hiding in the office and so on. Here they have bulletproof vests on. You look down on the street. Once again, we're close to the office, the newspaper office. And the official timeline doesn't match up because here, once again, no traffic, no parked cars, no pedestrians, and three people are coming running down in the street in black clothes. And when you really zoom in, I think it says police on the back of them, like this French police. And then they run off, and then after them comes the two terrorists. But the timeline says that the police was chasing them. So then you look at where the car was abandoned. They came on a small street again, once a very narrow little street, and they abandon the car. They jump out, they open the doors, leave them open, and runoff. When you look at that one, as far as I can see, the rear window is not broken anymore. And also, if you, there are two zebra crossings, and they're like metal poles, you know, making it impossible to park your car there. And if you count the metal poles from the zebra crossing, with the abandoned car, and then with a photo of the car that the forensic team checked out later, it's not the same distance to the pedestrian crossing. The ones the forensics were looking at is like 2 meters closer. I know it's taken with a telelens, and that is why I'm sure people will say, no, it's because it's a different lens. But when you really look into it, you will see that the pristine one, the one that they found the evidence in, that is parked very close to the pedestrian crossing. And also, if you go down on Google Map, you will see that they're standing in front of two different shops, not the same position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The latter of that, let me interject there, Ola, and give some potentials here, because I want to try to understand, because there are inconsistencies. That's a problem with the mainstream media. You know, they report on certain things, but they leave out things, they omit things, they don't ask the hard questions, they don't really get to the bottom of things, because they just, you know, believe what the authorities tell them. They believe what the police say, and that's not the job of the journalist. The journalist should say, you know, thank you, officer, for giving your report, but then go and check with other people, verify the story. Try, you know, that's what they should do, but they don't, right? So, another angle to this I want to ask you about was that the potential reason for the bulletproof vests and the security is, of course, that the Charlie Hebdo offices had previously been fired bombed. There were many threats made against them, and I've heard that they were actually issued security, you know, apparel, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, bulletproof vest, certain things to be able to protect themselves if something happened, because they've been threatened so many times. And that might be, I'm not saying it is in this case, but I'm saying that might be one of the explanations why certain people up on that roof shows up with the gear that they're doing. And I'm not sure either. I have not heard from anybody again who actually have, you know, I don't read French. I know some people do, but I wish there were more people that in some capacity had the ability to talk with these people, to get to them, people who know them, or even journalists, and ask them about some of these questions. Why was there what looks like a police officer on the roof immediately, right? So my question is, are there explanations for this, or are these discrepancies, inconsistencies that point to something else? Because I know that the video, the first video that I saw of it, of the shooters running through the street down there while you have a lot of people up on the roof, that video was shot in such a way, it was uploaded to YouTube from a stream on the television, French TV, I think. And what happens there is that they run a loop over and over and over again, right? They run the loop all the time while they're talking. If you look at any news, you know, program, they do this all the time. And what happened with that video, and I was actually going to edit it right. I didn't get to do that. I didn't have time at that point. But if you take the first portion of the video that you see in the YouTube video that was uploaded from the live stream, the first portion of that was actually meant to go a little bit later in the clip, and the one of the later portions was to go a little bit earlier. So I'm saying there is an inconsistency how they look and how they act up on the roof due to this fact that when the network runs the looped video and someone captures a stream of that, it's not the whole thing and we don't get the whole story there. So there are some inconsistencies that you can explain away, but it doesn't explain all of them. Don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Ola.
I totally agree. I'm not saying this is 100% sure. I'm pointing out things that I find strange and that could show to another solution to what we're being served, you know.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is you have to watch and see what is it we're being served.
Absolutely.
That is the whole thing.
That's right.
Problem, reaction, solution. Here we have a problem. The reaction is very clear, you know, oh my God, we're being under attack. The whole country is being under attack. The freedom of speech is being attacked. You know, all of these things, problem, reaction. And then what is the solution? And here they serve us a solution, you know, once again, it's the Muslims. And poor the Jews are under attack here. And the freedom of speech is under attack. The everything, you know, Western Europe or Western way of life is being attacked, instead of seeing that this is just a cartoonist that is being attacked, mm-hmm. if that is the yeah. true story.
That's right.
And
I also mentioned as well, emphasize your point there that, you know, we can sit here and debate, you know, the intricacies of the event, whether it's real or not. And we should. We should know. We should find out. It, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that the solution that they are going to offer us or the prospect of what we should do about this, that still remains a fact, whether they've brought in trained professional mercenaries, whether this is all a staged, you know, film set, or whether this is an event that actually happened. That doesn't, you know, you can take any of those possibilities, but that doesn't remove from how the authorities, how these are, that are, you know, allowing these things to occur, how they're seeking to use this situation for their own purposes. And that's very important to understand in this situation as well.
I would also suggest that it's almost like they're using different themes, you know, and where on standby, the whole propaganda machine is on standby. And I mean, it was only hours after this thing in Paris started that the whole slogan, Je suis Charles Hebdo, started, you know. And if you look at it, all of these signs where it says Charlie Hebdo, all of them are on black background with the same font, more or less. All of them are identical fonts. And if you
ask me, ISIS logo kind of looks like that too, by the way, but the black flag, you know. Anyway, go ahead.
No, but this is how they work our subconscious, you know. I would say to color schemes and repeating of themes and words. And I was on a really interesting show the other day with a hypnotist, and he was telling me about, it was his show, but he was telling me about these things, how they keep repeating, looping things and things to pump it into our subconscious. So it was really interesting to discuss these things with him as well, because he totally agreed with him.
Mm, yeah.
And here, I would very much suggest that a lot of these posters and the things that people were holding up with the Charlie Hebdo was pre-printed. It was already there, ready to go, 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 go. And when you look at these things, I think it's very important to be aware of media's part in the whole thing, because media, to a great extent, are controlled by the powers that at least I'm talking about. And here we have very, very, very often, I would say repeatedly, you have the reporter on site saying, oh my God, this has happened. It's a mass shooting. It's a terror drill, whatever. You know, this has happened. It's awful. It's awful. It's awful. And then they interview somebody. They just stop in the street. Please be aware of this person, because if it's a false flag, then that person might very well be part of it. That person will then say, oh, I saw this, I saw that, it was awful, awful, awful. But, and often the person will come with a solution, saying, my God, we need to ban the guns, we can't have it like this. It's, you know, or the 9/11, there was one witness down on the street, he said, well, the reason why the whole thing came down was because the high heat of the jet fuel and the weak structure. How on earth could a guy down on the pavement have any idea about these things? But that is how they do it. And so you have problem, reaction, solution, problem presented, reaction received, and then the reporter will very quickly, often within 30 seconds, come with the solution. We need more strict ban control. Or here in Paris, while the shooters were still on the run, I heard somebody say, well, and we need to heighten the securities at the airports. I was like, what? Why? What have the airports got to do with that? And that was one of the things afterwards that they used. They did it. Now their guards, armed guards in the schools and at the airports, it's just gone totally crazy and so on. So look at these things, and also look at the theme that, oh my God, the Jewish people are being under attack, and Netanyahu goes out and says, please bring all the Jews back to Israel.
Yeah,
it seems like this is the current theme, to come home, come home. The reason for that, I don't know, but I would say maybe strengthen the Israeli position against Palestine.
To expand, it's like, you know, it's like the powder keg has been lit, you know, and now when the Zionist forces have created a completely chaotic Europe, which is, you know, over the top, multicultural and stuff like that, they can go back to, they're going to go back to Israel and everything's going to be safe for them there. They're going to build a wall around themselves, right? I mean, literally, that's how absurd it is here, because he used the exact same thing in Copenhagen, of course, and that's the first thing he was hitting on. And he, actually, if we go back to Paris for a moment, it was very interesting how he hijacked the entire situation, even when, you know, they said Hollande was like visiting the synagogue and stuff like that, and it seemed like there was kind of, you know, tension between the two, but he pushed, Netanyahu elbowed himself way up in the front in the whole march, you know, this photo op, and basically said, oh my God, all of Europe now stands with Israel. Now Europe can finally understand the problems of Israel. Stand behind us, stand with us, right? That's what I got the message out of all this, you know?
And this is what you will hear in the different countries. I mean, in Sweden, we had Mona Sahlin. There were these meetings, you know, about the Holocaust survivors. And here it's once again, oh, these poor people, but it's never going to happen again. Now we stand together, you know, against racism, against violence, and so on. And thank God that the Jews now have Israel. That's word by word by word what is being presented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's quite interesting that you said gunpowder keg, because that is the name of the cafe, in the cultural cafe in Copenhagen, where the Copenhagen thing was carried out.
Yeah, that's right.
I just want to say that in a few months ago, there was a picture sent to me by somebody, and he said, I'm here on Ireland, and there's this very sinister image being sent around in Irish media that I find really disturbing. So I said, please send it to me. And it's like, it's sent out on Twitter as well by somebody called Israel in Ireland. And somebody, I don't know if it's true or not, but said that it was sent out from the Israeli embassy before these things happened. And it's four images. It's an image from Dublin where there's it looks like the Grim Reaper or a female Grim Reaper, a sculpture, and it says stamped on it, Israel now, Dublin next. Then there's an image of the Mona Lisa and with a grenade in her hands, and it says stamped on it, Israel now, Paris next.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a photo of the Little Mermaid where it says Israel now, Copenhagen next, and then there's an Italian sculpture where it says, was stamped upon it, where it says Israel now, Italy next. You know, when I received that, I thought that's quite bad taste, but I didn't really think of it. Then I heard I was leaked information by an inside source saying something similar. Then I heard that, so I started checking up, and I heard that there had been a bomb scare or almost a bomb explosion in Dublin at the Intel plant, but that had been stopped as far as I know. And later ISIS took responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure your listeners are aware of ISIS, at least in my opinion, an absolute hoax. It's just an updated boogeyman from Al-Qaeda and this whole thing going on. So
yeah, I want to ask you. We'll talk more about that later in the second hour. I'm absolutely with you when it comes to like the supply lines and the way they've pumped ISIS in the media, like there's these like super soldiers and nothing can defeat them and all this stuff. It's obviously hype. But however, we can talk more about this later. But that doesn't mean that there aren't actually people that are attracted to the organization and actually willfully go and donate, you know, their time, their effort, and in some cases their lives. Due to various reasons. There's multiple reasons for that. But see, this is the nature of controlled opposition. It doesn't mean that, you know, that actual genuine people aren't attracted to the controlled opposition to go fight for what they believe in. So to that extent, yes, it is real, but that doesn't mean that the origin point, the top position of the ISIS control is genuine. This is, I think, more or less, I mean, there's tons of articles now that are coming out in the last couple of weeks about just how involved Israel is in the creation and the supply lines of everything. The U.S., NATO is there again. AIPAC-controlled foreign policy is right there with them, exacerbating the problem, handing them, you know, the means and the weapons to do what they need to do in the Middle East to create this chaotic scenario to justify intervention by the West, NATO forces, Israel, etc. You know,
for sure, and this is what dictators have done for all ages. You know, they power attracts weak people. I would say weak people, and these are the people they gather and then they use them in whatever way they want. You know, they can use them, and they are being used big time for sure.
Let's take a last note on the Zula here. I want to hear what you have to say here. Let's do that, and then we can take a short break, and then we'll just pick right up after the break, okay? So let's finish up on that. And obviously, we want to hear a little bit more about your websites and everything. But, yeah, let's wrap up what your thoughts here before we take a break.
No, the thing was that when this happened in Dublin, then when it happened in Paris, I was reminded of this image. I thought, oh, my God, could this really be for real? Because they have a very sick tendency to put it out there right in front of us. You know, almost like a killer stalking his victim, playing around with him, that this so-called power elite, they are almost, you know, like playing around with a victim, like I said. And here, so I thought, oh, my God, could this be that Copenhagen is actually next? So what I did was to not take any chances. I went out big time on Facebook saying, please, 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 when you study these so-called false flag operations, a drill is a major part of them. There are almost always a drill that's going on at the same time. And the drill is there so that they can get the vehicles in position, the explosives, extras, whatever they need, including getting the patsy tricked sometimes into being in a position where he can later be blamed and killed for it. So I said, please, please, please be aware of, if you see or hear about any drill in Denmark or in Copenhagen, please let me know, or so we can possibly stop this. And a few days later, I was sent a photo of a poster in Denmark, and there was this guy, his name was David. He said, you know, I heard you on radio, and I just saw this poster on the way home. Could this be what you're talking about? And there's this poster saying that tonight, the night on the 14th of January, we're going to have a big drill in central Copenhagen at one of the train stations, one of the main train stations. And then there's a nice picture of a woman in uniform and so on. And I said, yes, yes, thank you so, so much. This is exactly what I'm talking about. So I pumped it out on Facebook saying, please, do us all a favor. If you are in the neighborhood, anywhere nearby, please bring your cameras, bring your mobile video cameras, whatever. Go down there, as many as you can, and start filming these people when they set it up. Make it very, very obvious that you are observing them, so that if this should have a more sinister agenda, we might be able to defuse it. People went down there, they filmed it, nothing happened. And then a month later, on the exact day, 1 month later, almost on the hour, boom, that's where the Copenhagen thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I'm going to go into great detail next hour about that one. My website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com, a very handpicked name because I truly believe in the power of exposing totally nonviolent but fearless exposure of these people and what they're up to. If somebody would like to support me, because I put 30 years of my life into this, I'm doing everything I can, and I really would like also to be able to go to these different locations and so on, to be able to on-site to get more into detail. There are sign up for my newsletter, my membership area, their donation buttons, or buy my books and so on. Extremely appreciated. Extremely appreciated.
You have an upcoming thing as well, right? You were going to do a little tour. Tell us about that.
I'm gonna do a Scandinavian tour. I'm going to be in Stockholm on the 28th of February to do a guided tour, a five-hour tour around the site of the murder of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, which is an incredible conspiracy, multi-layered. And I think you and I did like a 9-hour series of interviews just on this case to try and sort all of the threads out and so on.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm going to do that. It's on the day when he was killed, on the 28th of February. We're going to do it like 12 hours before it actually happened. So I hope it's going to be very, very interesting. I tell you, most of the time when I take people there, it's mind-blowing. They're absolutely blown away by how a thing like this could be carried out right in front of their eyes, right in front of the eyes of the whole world, and no one really understanding what's going on. Because the picture I'm going to show is totally different than the official story. I can tell you that one. Then I'm going straight to Gothenburg on the 1st of March. I'm going to do a public speak there. There's Facebook events about these things, all of them. Then directly from Gothenburg, I'm going to go to Malmö and give a speech there. And then I'm going straight to Copenhagen and do a guided tour around the latest site of these so-called terror acts on site, and bring people around there. It's going to be a 3-4 hour walk there as well. And I'm going to do multiple interviews both in Sweden and Denmark, and then I'm going to sleep on the way on the plane home. Really tired, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Can I also say that as soon as I get home, I'm off again to Barcelona, where I've been invited by Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot to join her and do a speech in Barcelona on the 7th of March, a Saturday, Sunday. So, busy, busy.
Very good. LightOnConspiracies.com is the website. We'll take a short intermission here, a short pause between the hours, and I'll tell you more about what is upcoming in the second hour right after we play a tune here, folks. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere, and we'll be right with you. We'll return with more here shortly in the second hour. As we continue, we'll go into the most recent event in Copenhagen and talk more about how it unfolded. We'll get Ulla's take on what lies at the background of this and how it was pulled off. We'll look at some of the available material so far, including some of the videos that has been released showing the event. We look at the perpetrator and try to figure out a little bit more about his background and how he might have been drawn into this. We'll also speak more about ISIS in Europe, Israel and U.S. involvement in the supply chain to these groups, how this benefits them, and of course how the internationalists are seeking to create as much ethnic conflict and chaos as possible. We'll wrap up speaking about the best things for now that we can do in order to help when and if something like this ever happens again. This is a way for you to be part of solving the problem of not enough material being available. We need reporters, we need people to pay attention, help to film, write down things, take notes, and photograph wherever you might be if this is something that happens in your city or area. We'll go into more of that in the second hour. RedIceMembers.com is a website where you can subscribe and tune in to all our programs. This is the place to go to enjoy everything that we do. You can also comment here, of course, be part of the discussion with other members, share your thoughts about the program. Our next show will be with Nick Kellerstrom on his book Breaking the Spell, The Holocaust, Myth and Reality. He's a British academic who's ventured into territory where few dare to tread. We'll be back with more after that as well, of course. We have another 314 coming up. We have E. Michael Jones, Sally Fallon, Gilad Atzmon, and many more after that. But don't miss our next hour. RedIceMembers.com. Go there to subscribe and stream or download. And we'll be right back with more, folks. Thank you so much for listening.